Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So we're going to focus in Yirtzeh Hashem this evening, and hopefully still a couple of more shiurim before Pesach, on some insights into the Haggadah. So what I'd like to cover, you know, it's interesting, every year when after Purim, when I begin to sit down and look at the Haggadah, so I always have difficulty moving past the first part of the Haggadah of Halach Ma'anya. And I think the truth is, I think for many of us, for many Siddurim, you know, if you compare the number of Divrei Torah in Halach Ma'anya versus towards the middle of the end of the Haggadah, usually the beginning gets an incredible amount of attention, and for good reason. So the truth is, we spoke about Halach Ma'anya last year, but I wanted to revisit it a little bit in an effort to try to shed a little bit of a different light on this beginning of the Haggadah. So let's take a look at number one. So Halach Ma'anya, this is the bread of affliction, or the poor man's bread, Yachalu Avasana Ba'arad Mitzrayim, that our forefathers ate in Egypt. Kol Dichvin Yeisei V'Yechol, all who are hungry, let them come and eat. Kol Ditzrich Yeisei V'Yifsach, all who are in need, bless you, all who are in need, come and bless you, come and join us for the Pesach Seder. Hashata Hacha, this year we are here, L'Shana Haba Ba'arad Yisrael, next year we will be in Eretz Yisrael. Hashata Avdi, this year we are in servitude. L'Shana Haba B'nei Chorin, next year we shall be truly free men. Now, already from the beginning we realize that this is a strange paragraph. Why? What catches your attention immediately? So first of all, the whole notion that we're sitting down and then inviting people, good. But the whole idea is that it's in Aramaic. The rest of the Seder, of course, is in Hebrew. Everything else is in Hebrew. This is in Aramaic. Not only that, but remember, even the flow of things doesn't seem to make sense. Here we begin speaking about the nature of matzah, and then again, only right afterwards do we begin to discuss manishtana, and only then does the real section of what's called magid. Magid, remember, is the primary part of the Pesach Seder, where we retell the story, we recount what occurred, we try to grow and to learn from this historical experience, we try to make it contemporarily relevant. That all takes place over the course of Magid. But interestingly enough, again, we have this paragraph from the beginning. So obviously, if it's plunked down over here, it must mean that in some way, somehow, it paves the way for the Seder experience. So I don't really need Halach Ma'anya so much to teach me any information, because the information contained here is also revisited over the course of the Seder. But being that it's in Aramaic, which was the vernacular for the Jews for a long time, and again, it seems to discuss thematic ideas. Now, I'll also say what's also interesting about this is if you notice in Halach Ma'anya, well, let's go take a step back. The Seder itself is comprised of two parts. What are the two parts of the Seder? Part number one, the Haggadah. But more specifically, Yetzias Mitzrayim. Right? The first part of the Seder is focused on Egyptian Exodus. What's the second part of the Seder? Messianic redemption. Messianic redemption. Remember again, the shift takes place at benching. So everything until benching is all about Egyptian Exodus. Remember what happens right by benching time. We pour the kos she Eliyahu, the cup of Elijah. Eliyahu Hanavi is the messenger who tells us Mashiach is coming. And the rest of the Seder is very much messianically future-oriented. What's unique about Halach Ma'anya? Halach Ma'anya brings all of this together. Because Halach Ma'anya, we speak about, again, the bread of affliction that our forefathers ate in Egypt. So we speak about the historical experience, but yet how does it end? Hashata hacha l'shana haba ba'arad Yisrael. This year we're here, next year in Eretz Yisrael. This year we're servants, we're slaves. Next year we'll be free. Again, a reference to Messianic era. So you see, even in this little paragraph, we're bringing together all of the elements of the Seder together as one. So what's the meaning, the deeper meaning of Halach Ma'anya? So I want to try to explore with you a couple of different approaches. Let's begin with number two. So this is from Rav Soloveitchik's commentary on the Haggadah. The Rav didn't write a commentary on the Haggadah. The Rav wrote certain ideas about Pesach, which were then collected into a commentary on the Haggadah. So the Rav writes the following. Halach Ma'anya. So first they call something very interesting, book by paragraph Aleph. Harammam b'Haggadah goris b'vahivu yatsam mitzrayim. Halach Ma'anya. So the Rav writes that in the Rambam's version of the Haggadah, so the Rambam's Haggadah, so this section doesn't just begin with Halach Ma'anya, the Rambam adds in an additional phrase, Bebahilu Yatsanu Mimitzrayim. In a great rush or with great haste, we left Egypt. V'tzarech Be'er, we have to ask ourselves a question. Ma hosif harambam bazeh. Why did the Rambam feel the need to add in that additional phrase, bebahilu, with great haste we left Egypt? Vitzi goes on, umau hemshech hadvarim lahalach ma'anya. What's the connection to that first statement, with great haste we left Egypt, to the rest of the paragraph of halach ma'anya? Vihine matzinu b'matzah shnei inyanim. So Soloveitchik writes that we find in matzah two interesting ideas. Matzah nikreis lechemoni. On one hand, matzah is called the poor man's bread or the bread of affliction. On the other hand, kolomar avdus v'shibud kimovu brashi v'zelashon lechemoni. Lechem shemaskir esa oni shenis ano b'mitzayim akan l'shono. That on one hand, matzah reminds us of the cruelty of servitude, of the difficulty of servitude. On the other hand, mitzad sheni, mevuar b'mishad rabbi Gamliel, de matzah hi al shem shenigalu m'mitzrayim. Chazinam de b'matzah nichlelu shnei inyanim. Mitzad echad shibud v'oni, u'mitzad sheni geula. So what the Rav points out here is something very interesting. And again, we could do a whole shiur on this, but we're not going to. But the almost like schizophrenic nature of matzah. That on one hand, again, matzah represents the bread of affliction. But yet, again, if you look in the Torah as to why we eat matzah, what reason does the Torah tell us for eating of matzah? Because we left Egypt with such great haste that there was not enough time to allow the dough to rise. So it's these interesting two contradictory matzah identities. Lechem, only the bread of affliction on one hand, but also the bread of emancipation, the bread of Exodus, the bread of ultimately leaving Egypt on the other. V'hine isa b'mitzvah, excuse me, v'hine isa b'mishnah, I'm in paragraph Beis now. He says, he al shem shenigalu, so actually skip down a little bit. So look at the last three lines in paragraph Beis. Asher l'fizeh, yesh levayer es nusach harambam. Now we can understand the Rambam's version of the Haggadah. What does the Rambam write? Bibahinu yatsalam mitzrayim, halach ma'anya. So the Rav writes over here, interestingly enough, so the Rambam writes, we left Egypt with great haste, and then what? And then, halach ma'anya, this is the bread of affliction. Why does the Rambam give that introductory statement, we left Egypt with great haste? Remember, the Rambam is a halachic worker. The Rambam was a halachic master. And therefore, everything he says has halachic ramifications. So when he adds in there, we left Egypt with great haste, bebahilu, yatsana mimitzrayim, halach ma'anya, the Rav says that the Rambam is giving us the two identities of matzah. That on one hand, we eat matzah, why? Because we left Egypt with great haste. On the other hand, we eat matzah, why? Why? Halach ma'anya, because it was the bread of affliction. So the Rav suggests that the reason why this paragraph was originally included was because it set the halachic tone for the evening. There are two things that we focus on over the course of the Pesach Seder. We focus on servitude and we focus on emancipation. Those are the two overarching thematic elements of the Leil HaSeder. We were slaves, we were servants, we reenact, we recreate some semblance of that servitude, but then we also recreate, reenact, and celebrate our emancipation. And why is it that matzah serves as the focal point for the evening? Why is it that matzah is the dominant object on the Leil HaSeder? And the answer is, because it represents both. Because matzah is the one thing that captures both thematic elements of the evening. On one hand, it represents servitude, because it's poor man's bread, right? Matzah is what you make when you've got nothing else, right? You have no yeast, you have no additives. All you have is a little bit of water, a little bit of flour, so matzah is poor man's bread. On the other hand, the amazing part about Pesach is that that symbol of our oppression, that symbol of our slavery, became the very symbol of our emancipation, newfound freedom. That bread that we had to bake off so quickly because we were constantly under the oppressive whip of the Egyptian taskmaster suddenly turned into the amazing bread of emancipation that occurred so quickly that there was no time to allow the dough to rise. So what the Rav suggests is that halach ma'anya actually serves a very important halachic purpose. It sets the halachic tone, the halachic framework, and the halachic foundation for the evening by telling us, A, about the dual theme, the dual thematic overtone of the night. On one hand, we commemorate servitude, we celebrate freedom, and also telling us that both of these experiences are anchored and are rooted in the very wafer of the matzah itself. So that's the first approach, that halach ma'anya is necessary because at the end of the day, it really lays the foundation. It lays the halachic foundation for what, bless you, for what we're commemorating over the course of the evening and telling us that matzah captures both of those themes. Take a look at number three, another approach, which we'll call the hashkafic approach. So here, this is again quoting this, I've actually quoted to you in the past. It's one of my favorite ideas on the Leil HaSeder. So here, Rav Soloveitchik focuses on more, which was raised before, of Kol Dichvin Yesei V'Yechol. Now, remember, just to review, you know, in past years, so we discussed, because obviously it's strange that we're saying, whoever's hungry, come and eat. Whoever's joining me, it's like inviting someone over for dinner after you're already up to dessert, right? Oh, why don't you come for dinner? So remember, at this point now, about Halach Ma'anya, what have we already done? What have we done? We've already made Kiddush. Now remember, again, that's significant because also on the Leil HaSeder, Kiddush represents the first cup. So we're not just Kiddush, it's also the first Adal HaKosos. So really the Seder is well underway. In fact, remember, it's more than just Kiddush. We've already done Kadesh, Orchatz, Karpas, and Yachatz, right? We've already done a number of things already. And again, none of those are the long parts of the Seder, but nevertheless, they're significant. Then we're around our table and we're saying, oh, whoever wants to join us, whoever wants to be a part of it, come in and eat. So obviously, it can't be understood literally as an invitation because A, it's happening once the Seder has already begun, and B,
we're already
inside.
Right, you're inside. Remember, who am I talking to? I'm talking to the people at my table. So good. It's good to affirm that the people at your table were truly invited. That is good to say. I'm happy you're here. I'm happy you came. But it's a strange type of it. So again, in past years, I don't want to go through everything we've done in the past, but we've given a number of different interpretations of this. So Rav Soloveitchik, I'll just say, for example, because I'll bring it up because we mentioned it last year, the Minchas Asher of Asher Weiss, he says something very beautiful. He says that in fact, what this is, this statement, Kol Dichvin Yesei V'Yechol, is a statement that reflects on the absence of the Beis HaMikdash. Because he says, for example, in times of the Temple, times of the Beis HaMikdash, you had a Karban Pesach. Now, what was that halacha? Now, interestingly enough, Karban Pesach night was the one night of the year that you could not invite last-minute company. Why not? Because everyone had to be a part of a chabura, had to be part of a group for the Paschal Lamb by midday on Erev Pesach. You already have to be part of it. So meaning, you can't just show up and heard, oh, I heard you have stuffing in your Karban Pesach, can I eat with you? You know, you can't do that. You have to be part of a chabura. Therefore, again, there was no such thing on Seder night as someone inviting over last-minute company. Couldn't happen. So Rav Asher Weiss writes, he writes very beautifully, he says that Kol Dichvin Yesei V'Yechol is a statement reflecting the absence of the Beis HaMikdash. That as much as I am celebrating, as much as I'm celebrating tonight our freedom that we got from Egyptian emancipation, my simcha is not complete because we don't yet have the third Beis HaMikdash. And so if I wanted to, what could I do? I could even go out to the street and bring someone in for the Seder right now. Why could I do that? Because there's no Beis HaMikdash, because there's no Karban Pesach. But Rav Soloveitchik takes this in a different way. And the Rav here says something that is truly, truly beautiful. The Rav writes, number three, paragraph Aleph, Kol Dichlin Yesei V'Yechol. So Rav asks, Yesh La'ayin, Lama Maschilin Es Ha'agada B'Halach Ma'anya, Ha'asak Espach Nasas Archim. So the Rav is bothered by this. Why is this here? Whoever's hungry, come and eat. Okay, very nice. Hachnas HaSarachim is always very good. But why is this the beginning? Remember again, I can't stress enough. This essentially, although it's not the formal start of Magid, it is essentially the beginning of Magid, which is the most important part of the Seder. So asks the Rav, why are we focusing on Hachnas HaSarachim? Why are we focusing on hospitality, having guests? Mitzvah Gidoli. Of course, it goes without saying that Hachnas HaSarachim is a very important mitzvah. But says the Rav, I don't understand. What does that have to do with the Haggadah? And look what the Rav writes. And this is so beautiful. Omer command ditzarech leisev leicho v'lo rak b'lel seder. So the Rav says, well, maybe you'll say that hachnas hasarachim is important. The truth is, we have examples of this in the Talmud. He quotes over here that Rav Huna, whenever Rav Huna would go out and sit down to literally break bread to eat, he would always extend an invitation to those in need. Rav Huna did this. Can you imagine that? Every single meal, he always extended an invitation to those in need. So the Rav writes. So, but again, If you're going to do that, then do it every night. If you're not going to do it every night, why are we dafka doing it on the Leil HaSeder? So good, it's paragraph base. V'nir lomar, dihine eved eno yachol lahachnis archim. So the Rav writes, there is one mitzvah, there are many mitzvahs, but one mitzvah specifically which a servant, a slave, cannot do. And that is the mitzvah of having guests, of hospitality. Why not? Daha kaimalon, ma shekana ha'eved kan rabo, ve'ein la'eved nechosim, ve'gam ein lo bayis. So that's something amazing. An eved, a slave, can't have guests, can't do hospitality. Why? Because it's interesting halacha that an eved, a slave, doesn't have the ability to acquire anything. Whatever he acquires becomes the property of the master. In order to do hachnasas archim, in order to be a hospitable person, to have guests, what do you need? What do you need? You need stuff. You need your own home. You need your own food to be able to share those things with others. Therefore, says Rav, listen to how beautiful this is. V'lachin. Maschilim es ha'agada b'hachnasas archim. Therefore, we begin the Haggadah with hachnasas archim. V'omrim. Kol dich v'yesei v'yecho. Whoever wants to eat, come and join us. Dezeu derech chirus. Because this is a manifestation and an example of our newfound freedom. Laharos she'ein anu avadim. To show we are not slaves. Ela b'nei chorin she'anu machnisim archim. Such a beautiful idea. So the Rav says that literally what we're doing is by inviting guests, by now, again, is Rav suggesting that it is a literal invitation? No, because remember, go back to what you said before. It's a real invitation. Now do it at the beginning of the Suda, doing before you started anything. But rather, what it is, it's a behavioral statement. It's saying that if I wanted to, I can go ahead and invite guests to my home tonight, which is another way of saying that I am a free person. I am a free man. I have a free woman. I have koach of ownership. I have the ability to acquire, the ability to own. And if I wanted to, I would have the ability to go ahead and invite others. But I think we could take the Rav a step further. And really what the Haggadah is saying is like this. The Haggadah, you know, the whole night, what's the one question that's on our mind throughout the Leil HaSeder? And don't say, what time is the Seder going to be over? Right? What is the one question that's on our mind throughout the Leil HaSeder? One question. When will be free again? Good. Also simpler. What does it mean to be free? Okay, I'm free. Now what? What is the Jewish definition of freedom? That's what we're celebrating. That we are free men and women. That's what we're really celebrating. So, okay, very nice. I'm free. Wonderful. What is the purpose of that freedom? What is the tachlis of that freedom? What am I supposed to accomplish with that freedom? And what Rav Soloveitchik is suggesting so beautifully is that from a Judaic perspective, do you know what the essence of freedom is? The essence of freedom is the ability to do for the other. That is the essence of freedom. Because what is a slave preoccupied with? What is slave? Survival. A slave has to survive. I'm focused on. I'm focused on making it through the day. I'm focused on not getting lashes. I'm focused on not getting beaten up. I'm focused on my own survival. My bandit, I don't have enough emotional resources to be able to focus on the other. I'm totally focused on myself. You know, Elie Wiesel writes, he says that, when did he realize that they were freed? When did he realize that they were freed from Auschwitz, freed from the concentration camps? He writes, they realized when they were free, when he saw people begin to share their food with one another. He said, in the camps, most people did not share their food. You know, you hear the stories of righteousness, but most people did not. Because they were evil, chas v'shalom? No. Because people were focused on what? Because people were focused on survival. Because that, in difficult times, I just need to survive. He said when he saw people taking from their ashes, taking from their food, and breaking it apart and giving it to others, he said, now, that moment, I realized that we're free. Says Rav Soloveitchik, that's the meaning of Halach Ma'anya. Halach Ma'anya answers the question that the Baal Haggadah knows is going to be on our mind throughout the night. I'm free. Now what? I'm free. What do I do with that freedom? And the answer is, Kol dichvin yesei v'yecho, kol ditzrich yesei v'yifsach. It's a very important idea. A life of meaning and a life of freedom is a life of giving. A life of where you are there for the other. A life of freedom does not mean that you have the ability to plow all of your resources inward, or that you have the ability to go ahead and just build yourself up, take care of yourself. Yes, you have to take care of yourself in order to be good for others, but a life of freedom is a life of giving. A life of freedom is a life of kol dichvin yesev yechol. So according to the Rav, really halach ma'anya is actually telling us the hashkafa, the Jewish outlook on freedom, and it's here in the beginning. Why? Because it sets the tone for the rest of the Haggadah. It sets the tone for everything. And by the way, that's why, interestingly enough, we're not going to do it today, but you'll take this idea, you'll see this notion of giving to the other extends throughout the entire Seder. In fact, again, we mentioned before the Karban Pesach. So, you know, Karban Pesach cannot be accomplished without someone else. Why not? Why not? Because the halacha is, you are not supposed to go ahead and leave over any meat of the Karban Pesach. Now, I don't care how much you like lamb, right? There is no shawarma, right? There's no one person that is going to be able to finish off an entire lamb. You just can't do it. Which means that by definition, you must bring others into your circle. You must bring others into your life. There is no way to be free without somehow contributing to the other. Another idea of the hashkaf of halakha. I said again, I really should have broken 3 and 4 into 2 different ideas, but I put them both under the umbrella of hashkafa. So according to the Rav, halach ma'i is a hashkafic, a Jewish outlook statement. Definition of freedom is the ability to give to, the ability to be there for the other. Rabbi Lam has a beautiful commentary on the Haggadah called the Royal Table. So he writes very beautifully. He says, halach ma'anya, matz is called lechemoni, the poor man's bread. A denial of the ability of money or material influence to save us. He says, it is a symbolic refutation of the omnipotence of science and technology by the very fact that matzah must be made from the simplest of substances, flour and water alone, in the most primitive of ways. The matzah is a bread which does not rise, it does not puff itself up in boastfulness, and is thus a symbol of humility, a denial of the working of the ego and of itself. Pleasure too is counted out. By custom, we do not salt the matzah, which we eat at the Seder, as we do with bread that we eat all year long. Even power is dismissed, symbolized by the fact that the matzah we eat at the Seder, in fulfillment of the special commandment, must be a prusa, a broken matzah, a symbol of powerlessness. So the matzah itself is a symbol of iconoclasm, or the breaking of idols of our times, and thus becomes a most appropriate food of faith, lechem dehemenusa, as the Kabbalists refer to matzah. So what is Rabbi Lam saying? In this approach, halach ma'anya also sets the tone for what it means to be free. Because what does it mean to be free? You see, we often assume that what it means to be free means, being in free means being in charge. No one else is in charge of me. No one else is in control of me. I am on my own. I am autonomous. I am independent. But amazingly enough, the Jewish view of freedom is that a person could only become truly free when they yield the power back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When I realize that at the end of the day, it is the Ribono Shel Olam who pulls the strings. It is the Ribono Shel Olam ultimately who makes things happen. It is God. It's true. I have to put in my effort. True, I have to partner with HaKadosh Baruch Hu to bring about certain results. But at the end of the day, it is not science. It is not technology. It is none of those things that are made by man that ultimately will cause things to happen. They can partner, but it's HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the essence of matzah. Ha'lach ma'anya. Look at this simple bread. The truth is that simple bread represents, if you think about it, simple bread is the antithesis of human dynamic activity. What is matzah? Matzah doesn't represent anything great, right? Matzah doesn't represent any significant accomplishment. Matzah represents the most basic elements being mixed together and just simply baked off. Nothing great, no technological advances, as if to show that true freedom is the recognition or is the ability to recognize that it is truly HaKadosh Baruch Hu who drives everything and anything within our world. So between the Rav and Rabbi Lam, we have understand that Halach Ma'anya is not really here as much for informational purposes as much as it is here for Hashkafic purposes. to give us proper outlook for the Leil HaSeder. Again, according to Rabbi Lam, let's go out of order. According to Rabbi Lam, Halach Ma'anya, just by simply making the statement, this is the poor man's bread. So how could it be, going back to a little bit like what we learned before with the Rav in approach number one, how could it be that the same bread which represents the bread of servitude, the bread of where you have nothing but flour and water, how can that bread represent freedom as well? And the answer is because true freedom is not found in the technological or scientific advances of man. True freedom is only found when one places their trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When one places their trust and their confidence in God, that is where one finds true freedom. Rav Soloveitchik would say, what's the definition? So according to Rabbi Lam, the definition of true freedom is the freedom or the ability to put my complete faith in God. You see, why isn't the slave free? Why isn't the slave free? Oh, because he depends on his master. Because for the slave, God is his master. The master determines when I get up. The master determines when I go to sleep. The master determines what I'm going to do. The master determines if I'm going to get fed, if I'm not going to get fed. But yet when we left Egypt, it's true, we switched one master for another, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But freedom represents the ability to place that confidence and that power in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hands. Thereof, true freedom represents the ability, not just to do for myself, but real freedom represents the ability to do for the other. As such, the way we demonstrate our freedom on the Leil HaSeder, rights thereof, is we invite company, not literally, but figuratively. And now that I own things, the things that I own are only meaningful if somehow I use them to benefit the other. I have abilities, I have kochos, I have strengths. All of those are only meaningful if some way, somehow, I'm not just using them for myself, but I'm really using them to build up and to cultivate the other. Take a look at number 5. Rav Kook takes a little of a different approach. So Rav Kook writes, we're not going to do this whole piece, we'll do most of it. So Rav Kook writes a very beautiful idea here. He says, Halach ma'anyo, kol dichvin kol disrich hashat ahacha, be'ezras Hashem yisparach, efaresh tam hak dam hazos. So Rav Kook writes, I'm going to explain to you why we have this paragraph here, what the nature of this introduction is. V'hanira shetiknuha la'achar ha'churban. So the Rav writes, it would appear that this paragraph was added in after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, which makes sense, which would also make sense as to why it's in Aramaic. It was then after the destruction of the temple. So Rav Kook says, I don't understand. It's a pretty good paragraph, right? Why is it a good paragraph? Because it frames the identity of matzah. It tells us that matzah, again, is the bread of affliction. It would have made sense to have this paragraph even before the destruction of the temple. Why only post-destruction is it added? Vayoser pela. And there's a bigger question. Paragraph Beis. Ki kodim she'ilas manashtana, ha'amar ha'lachma anyo, ve'imkin maksha she'bechol ha'leilos anu achlim chametzu matzah, halo amar mikodem ki lechem azeh, achlu b'mitzrayim, lachin yochlum l'zecher. So Rav Kook asks another simple question, but profound question. Right after Halach Ma'ayim, you say Manashtana. And what's one of the questions we ask in Manashtana? We say, Shebachol halilos anu oklim chametzu matzah, halayla zeh kula matzah. Every other night we eat chametzu matzah, tonight we only eat matzah. So Rav Kook says, honestly, why is that a question? We just answered the question already. What's the answer? Halach ma'anya diachalav asanav arid mitzrayim. What are you talking about? We just said it before, right? This is the bread of affliction that our forefathers ate in Egypt. We already discussed why it is that we're eating this bread. If we've already discussed why we're eating the bread, then why the need to ask the question afterwards? Ach nira ve'ezras Hashem yisparach leval. So look what Rav Kook writes. I'm going to tell you why this is here. Leval yarach levavenu v'naatziv nafshenu al godol hanafila asher begalusenu. So Rav Kook writes, and a lot of Mefarshim on the Haggadah write this as well, that historically the Seder was a very difficult experience for the Jew. Remember that the diaspora experience that we are having now is atypical to the diaspora experience of the Jews over the last 2,000 years. So historically, Rav Kook alludes to, Pesach was a very difficult time for the Jews. Why? First of all, we know historically that Pesach was often a time of some of the most brutal anti-Semitic behavior, specifically revolving around blood libels and matzos. So Rav Kook says that when Jews came to the Pesach Seder, there was often this feeling of, this is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. You want me to celebrate that I'm free? You want me to celebrate that I'm emancipated. You want me to celebrate that I'm a Ben Chorin, but I'm not a Ben Chorin. What are you talking about? I live at the mercy of my Gentile neighbors. Who knows when there's going to be another blood libel, another pogrom, another who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? So you want me to sit here in my kittel and with my matzahs and leaning on my pillow like I'm some Ben Chorin, but the truth is I haven't been a Ben Chorin for 2,000 years. Again, we live in such a dramatically different time. It's hard for us to appreciate this. But the truth is you don't have to go that far back in Jewish history for the Jew to say, I just don't feel free on the last Seder. He says, we become sad. Our Goldel Hanafilah, Sheber Galus, look how far we've fallen. Look at what we had and look at where we are now. Turn the page. Paragraph Gimel. Ve'ein anu mekayim mitzvos karban Pesach. Furthermore, even our observant of Pesach is not complete, because after all, we don't even have a karban Pesach. V'gam shelo ne'emar lama niskar ha'avdus v'anachnu kayom hazeh gam kein avadim. I don't have to remember servitude. You know, we know I don't have to remember servitude. You know why? Because I'm living servitude, right? I'm living it. I experienced this. Uma nosis b'ga'alusa mikodem. You know, and the truth is, sometimes we say to ourselves, okay, I'm really, really happy for the Jewish people that they had this wonderful redemption 3,000 years ago. It's great. It's fantastic. What does it do for me now? Okay, so wonderful, we were redeemed, but you know, there's been a lot that's happened between Egyptian redemption and my current reality. And the truth is, my current reality is pretty difficult. My current reality is not geula, it's not redemption. My current reality is a lot more tsara, a lot more difficulty than anything else. So tell me what you want me to do with some historical experience from 3,000 years ago and why that experience is supposed to make me happy and feel free today, despite the fact that if you look at my circumstances, I am anything but free. Look, he writes, Al Zeh Amar. Therefore, Rav Kook writes, what does the Haggadah say? Ki kehalach ma'anyo. Like this bread of affliction. She'in lanu mizbeach lahakriv ha-pesach. What are we saying? So Rav Kook says, you know, in some of the Haggadahs, you know, in the Seder, there are different minhagim. So in some practices have it that when you say kehalach ma'anyo, you pick up the piece of matzah. Right, you pick up the piece of matzah. And literally you're holding the piece of matzah and saying, Kehalach ma'anyo, like this bread of affliction. What does it mean? She'in lanu mizbeach lahakriv ha-pesach. So you know, when I look at that matzah, what does it reinforce? This is all I have for tonight. There's no Karban Pesach. There's no Beis HaMikdash. This is all I have. V'halechem ani b'lo mitzos ha'aretz. All I have is the matzah without any of the other mitzos associated with the Eretz Yisrael, the Beis HaMikdash. U'kimozeh. So you know what the amazing part is? Here's one thing that I can connect with. This same bread that I'm eating tonight, this is mamish, the same exact bread that my forefathers ate in Egypt. Same bread. And again, same experience. They were downtrodden. They were afflicted. They were hurt so terribly. They ate this bread of affliction. And I'm eating the same bread. But here's the amazing part. Ve'im kol zeh. Nigalu. You know what the amazing part is? My forefathers in Egypt were in the same boat, if not worse, than I am. They also thought that there was no end. They also thought that there'd be no salvation, but yet what? They were saved. Yet what? Salvation came for them. V'gam anachnu niskar ha-gu'ula ha-asida v'yechazek bitchoneinu b'Hashem. And says Rav Kook, so therefore what do we do? We go ahead and we lift up that matzah. And we say to ourselves, "Kehalach ma'anya diachalu avasana ba'ara dimitzrayim." I'm holding up the same matzah that my forefathers ate in Egypt. And just like when my forefathers ate it, they were so hopeless. There was nothing that they had. They saw no light at the end of the tunnel. But yet what? Salvation did come. So too, I believe that same way I hold onto the matzah, salvation will come for me also. It might take a while. The road might be long. The road might be turbulent. But salvation will come for me as well. He goes on. And even if it takes a long time, I have staying power. I'm ready to wait for the salvation.
Ach kol dich yisevi yifsach.
Ki ha Pesach necha asova. Let's just read this line, then I'll explain. Vein shayach bo dichvin ella ditzrich. So listen to what he says. Rav Kook says so beautifully. So listen to how this plays out. So Rav Kook is saying that first of all, this was codified later on in history after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And whoever the codifier was realized that the Jew was going to reach an existential difficulty at the Leil HaSeder. How can I pretend that I'm free when I'm really not? How can I pretend like I'm emancipated when I feel so encumbered and overwhelmed by the difficult realities of my life? To which Rav Kook says, what did Chazal say? Pick up your matzah. Pick up your matzah. And you say to yourself, "Kehalach ma'anya diachalu avasana ba'arad mitzrayim." This is the same bread that my forefathers ate in Egypt. Now that linking of experience is very important. Because remember, how did the Jews, how did our grandparents feel in Egypt? How did our grandparents feel? Hopeless. How do we know that? Because when Moshe Rabbeinu, remember in Shmos, comes to them with, or actually in Bo, comes to them with the Arba Lashon HaShogel, the four expressions of freedom. He tells them, Votseisi, Vitzalti, Vigaalti, Vilakachti, Veveisi. He tells them all these expressions of redemption. What was their response? What was their response? Velo Shamu al Moshe, Nikot Zerach, and we have Odekasha. Moshe, come on. We love you, man. We really do. But you know what? We're not getting out of here. We've been here for a second. This is it. This is the end of the road. It was impossible for them to see that there would be any level of salvation. Instead, what did they do? They went back and they ate their matzah. This is what we have. So if Cook says, the beginning of the Seder, when you're saying to yourself, come on, why am I celebrating that I'm free? And by the way, we all feel this in different ways because the truth is, we're all enslaved by something. Some of us are enslaved by certain material realities. Some of us are enslaved by emotional realities. Some of us are enslaved by circumstantial realities. And those are realities which very often we look at them and we say, you know what? It's not clear that I'm ever going to overcome this. It's not clear that this is ever going to change. This might just be my life. Why should I hold out any change that anything is going to get any better? And Rav Kook suggests something amazing. You pick up your matzah. You look at that matzah and you say to that matzah, "Kehalach ma'anya diachalu avasana ba'arad mitzrayim." I am eating the same exact bread of hopelessness that my ancestors ate in Egypt. But you know what happened? What happened? Fill in the blank. What happened? They were redeemed. See, even though they were hopeless and they thought things would never change for the better, things did change for the better. And therefore, if I just keep my head up, if I just sometimes keep treading water, if I keep surging forward, things will change for the better in my life as well. Doesn't mean everything's going to be perfect. Doesn't mean everything's going to fall right into place, but things will get better. And look how it continues. Kol dichvin yeseh ve'yechol, like we said before, is a statement that reflects the absence of the Beis HaMikdash. Because remember, again, on Pesach night, there was no such thing as a hungry person. Why was there no such thing as a hungry person? Because everyone was part of a chabura. Everybody was part of a group. So right now, I'm hungry. Right now, I'm empty. Right now, I'm lacking. But if I just hold on a little bit, you know what's going to happen? I'm going to hear the words, Kol ditzrich yetzei v'yifsach. If I just hold on a little bit longer, I'll hear the words that have someone inviting me to join them to for the Karban Pesach. Meaning at some point in time, things will turn around. Geula will come. And if you take this a little bit further, Hashata Avdi, L'shana Haba B'nei Chorin. This year, things are difficult. I'm enslaved to certain realities, but you know what? It could be that if I keep moving forward, if I keep my head up, if I keep working, maybe by next year I'll be free. Hashata Hacha, this year we're still in Galus, but maybe L'shana Haba Ba'arad Yisrael. Maybe next year Geula will come. So according to Rav Kook, the entire message of Halach Ma'anyo, this simple, nondescript Aramaic prayer, is the ultimate message of Jewish hope. On an evening which could lend itself to such despondency, because you know sometimes you know how, like, if you have a bad situation, if you don't think about it, so you're able just to not think about it. But then, when you have to deal with the contrast, then that contrast very often amplifies the compromised nature of my current circumstances. So I know I have a difficult life, but now when Leila Seder comes and I'm supposed to act like free royalty, it says Rav Kook, it amplifies all the things that are wrong. And Rav Kook says, it's okay. You know how you get strength? You're not the first person in life to deal with adversity. You're not the first person in life to deal with adversity and feel hopeless. That was the same dynamic in Egypt, but the same way they came out of it, we will come out of our personal and national hopelessness as well. Just hold on. Just stay the course. Just keep your head up. Just keep going forward. Just keep growing. Just keep your head above water, and you will see that change, that salvation will come. It doesn't always mean the change and salvation we want, how we want or when we want. The change and salvation will come. Let's take a look at this last portion, and we'll bring everything together. So this last approach is from a beautiful Agada called the Beis Aron. I forgot the name of the author, I apologize. But this author is actually interesting. He hand-wrote this manuscript, and he wrote a commentary on the Haggadah, and then he wrote three other commentaries on its primary commentary. So the commentary is called Beis Aron, and then he wrote another, a supra-commentary? A supra, if that's the right word, a supra-commentary on his Beis Aron called Divrei Aron. And when I saw this at first glance, so it looked very simple, but then when we explore a little bit more, it's so incredibly and impactfully profound. Look what he writes. Hashotah ha'cha l'shana ha'ba ba'ar di Yisrael. Makshin ala kevel. So the truth is, why do we need both? Meaning, why do we have to say Hashana ha'cha, Hashotah ha'cha l'shana ha'ba ba'ar di Yisrael? Why don't we just say what? Just say next year in Jerusalem, right? Next year in Yisrael. L'shana ha'ba ba'ar di Yisrael. I know that I'm here. We all know that we're here. I don't need to make that statement. Really, what I'm aiming for is that next year I hope to be in Yerushalayim. So why do I have to first say this year I'm here, next year in Jerusalem, next year in Eretz Yisrael? Just say next year in Eretz Yisrael. Look what he writes. V'yish lomar ki ein maspik ma da'amar l'shan ha'bar ba'ar di Yisrael. It's not enough to say that next year we'll be in Eretz Yisrael. Listen to this. Dehari achshav anu yecholim gam kein lihios be'Eretz Yisrael. Because the truth is, if we wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael right now, especially Baruch Shem times that we live in, so all of us have that ability, right? If I wanted so badly to go to Eretz Yisrael, I get on a plane and I could go. But that's not the ikker. The ikker is not necessarily just to simply be in Eretz Yisrael. Va'al kein amar lo shenihye begalos be'Eretz Yisrael ela hashata avdi l'shana haba b'nei chorin. So what he writes is the following. What he says is, you could be in Eretz Yisrael, but you could still ultimately be in Golos. What does that mean? So that could be perhaps reflective on Eretz Yisrael, that perhaps if Eretz Yisrael has not had its Kedusha maintained, it could be like Golos. But on a deeper level, what he's saying over here is that a person could be in Eretz Yisrael. You know, you could be geographically in a particular place, but it doesn't mean that your heart and your soul are there. I'll give you a good example of this. The Torah says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted Adam to go to Gan Eden, it says, Vayikach asa Adam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took Adam, and he put him in Gan Eden. And Rashi HaKadosh comments, and he says, what does it mean? Vayikach lakcho bidvarim. He took him with words, meaning he had a conversation with him, and he convinced him to go to the Garden of Eden. So the Maharal of Prague says, I don't understand, why does Rashi say that? Maybe lakcho, maybe God took him, means what? Means what? God picked him up and put him in the Garden of Eden. How do you know that it means he persuaded him with words? So the Maharal says something amazing. The Maharal says that sometimes in life, my body could be in one place, but my heart and my soul are somewhere so different. So different. Hey, so says the Maharal, HaKadosh Baruch Hu realized he could pick Adam up and put him in Gan Eden. But what's the danger? The danger is that although Adam's body may be there, his mind and his soul would not be. Therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to convince Adam that this is a good idea to go to Gan Eden, so that when Adam goes, he goes with body and mind and spirit. So says the Divrei Aron something so beautiful. You can be in Eretz Yisrael, but you can still be in Golos. How? If a person is not maximizing their potential, a person is not maximizing their abilities, a person is just content with being in a particular geographic area but is not developing themselves as a person, then it's true I'm an Eretz Yisrael. But what? but there's still, on a certain personal level, I'm still in galus. I'm still outside. That's why he writes, the different Aaron writes, that we say, Hashata Avdi Lashana Haba B'nei Chor. He wants to suggest that the two phrases kind of go together. Hashata Avdi corresponds, this year we're slaves, corresponds to what? Hashata Hacha, this year we're here. Right now I'm here and I'm a slave. Right? Lashana Haba B'nei Chor. Next year we'll be free, corresponds to what? To being in Eretz Yisrael. I don't just want to be geographically in Eretz Yisrael, but I want to be free. I want to be a Ben Chorin. I want to maximize my abilities. I want to be there not just in body, but in heart and soul as well. And I think what comes out from the Divrei Aaron is something, I think, a very nuanced point that is so important. Sometimes we think that full self-actualization, reaching my potential, actualizing my sense of self and my abilities, that I can only do that in a certain place. Oh, if only I can get there. Now, sometimes there is a geographic place. Sometimes there is a geographic place. Sometimes there may be a stage in life. Sometimes there may be a certain accomplishment. I know I have so much to give, but I can't do it here. Can't happen here. Why not? Just can't happen here. It's got to be there. And the truth is, what the base Aaron is, the very Aaron is saying is, that's unequivocally false. You know what freedom means? Freedom means the ability to maximize your potential wherever you may be. Freedom means the ability to actualize your potential wherever you are geographically and wherever you are spiritually, wherever you are emotionally, and wherever you are, again, biologically, meaning however old you are. I quoted this. I don't remember. It might have been in this year. But, you know, if Cook suggests that this is part of the same reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah in the desert. So Rav Kook says, it's interesting, that why didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu give the Torah in Eretz Yisrael? Right? If you think about it, it would have made so much, what would have been a great place for, well, I was going to say Sinaitic revelation, but what would have been a great place for revelation? Best place for revelation? Har Habayis, Har Moriah. Right? After all, again, that's the site of the Akedah, that's the site of the Beis HaMikdash. Give the Torah there, Rav Kook says, because had HaKadosh Baruch Hu given the Torah in Har Sinai, I would have erroneously thought that the only place Torah can exist is where? Is Eretz Yisrael. And this is Rav Kook talking. Rav Kook was a pretty big Zionist. Rav Kook was saying, it's not true. Torah, spirituality, maximization of potential could occur anywhere you are. The proof to that is, where do Klal Yisrael say, Na'aseh v'nishma? They don't say Na'aseh v'nishma in the Old City. They don't say Na'aseh v'nishma in Tel Aviv. They don't say Na'aseh v'nishma in Me'esh Sharim. Where do they say Na'aseh v'nishma? The truth is, we don't even know where they say Na'aseh v'nishma. It's somewhere in the Sinai Desert, in some nondescript place. Somewhere quite literally in the middle of nowhere. Why? That was by divine design. Because the HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to teach the people that wherever you are in life, you have to maximize your circumstances. Could it be better somewhere else? Of course. Wouldn't we all agree that, of course, I could feel more spiritual and be more ruchni in Eretz Yisrael? Of course, the air in Eretz Yisrael is different than the air here. It's more conducive to spiritual service. There's no question about that. But does that mean that I can't accomplish something great here? Absolutely not. Wherever you are in life, wherever you are geographically, wherever you are emotionally, wherever you are biologically, wherever you are in life, you must maximize your circumstances. And what the Divrei Aaron is suggesting, and this is what's quite beautiful, is that this is the message of Halach Ma'anya. And the truth is, we can really bring this all together because all the different approaches are not mutually exclusive at all. What the Divrei Aaron is saying is Hashata Hacha L'Shana Babar Adei Yisrael. So, you know, how do we normally translate, how do we normally understand that phrase? This year we're here, Nebuch. Next year we'll be in Eretz Yisrael. This year, I'm Fashleptzach, right? This year, I'm in Nebuch. I can't get it together. Next year, it's going to be good. It's not what it means, says Divrei Aaron. Hashata Hacha. Right now, I'm here. Do I want to be here? No. Would I give my right arm to be in Eretz Yisrael? Of course. But for whatever the reason, I'm not there right now. Hashata Hacha. Right now, I'm here. Parentheses. And therefore, you know what true freedom means? True freedom means the ability to maximize your potential and abilities wherever you are in life. Don't spend your life wishing to be somewhere else. Don't spend your life thinking that if you were somewhere else, you'd be so much better, so much holy, so much more pious. Because the truth is, at the end of the day, that's just our ability to kick the can down the road, to take the heat off us, and not have an obligation to accomplish. Instead, hashata hacha. This is where I am right now, and how can I maximize my abilities? Yes, Lashana Barbar Adisha, I hope next year will be even better, but I'm going to maximize to the best of my abilities right here where I am right now. Hashata Avdi, this year I'm a servant. I have many circumstances that encumber me, many circumstances that hold me back, many circumstances that essentially place shackles around. We all have them. We all have circumstances that keep us shackled to certain realities. So a person says, oh, this year I'm a slave. What can I do? I'm shackled. Nothing I can do about it. Not true. Hashata Avdi, this year I'm a slave. I'm enslaved to certain things. I have to figure out how to maximize my abilities and opportunities, even as an Eved. L'shana ba'a b'ach b'nei chorin, I hope it's going to be better next year. I hope I can even self-actualize even more next year. But I won't wait to accomplish until some beautiful future comes about. I will maximize my current reality as is. And if we bring this all together, because as I mentioned, none of these are mutually exclusive. Now you understand why I have so much difficulty moving past Halach Ma'anya. Because again, in this little paragraph, which by the way is not even part of the original Haggadah, is an add-on paragraph, we see all of these incredible lessons. So what comes out from Halach Ma'anya? What are the messages? First, we have a halachic message that Halach Ma'anya helps to frame the thematic motif of the evening. On one hand, again, we're speaking about Egyptian servitude, emancipation, and then messianic emancipation, redemption, and that's all contained within Halach Ma'anya. Furthermore, Halach Ma'anya also highlights the dual identity of Matzah. As the Rambam writes, Bebehili Yatzan, the time when you left Egypt with such haste, Halach Ma'anya, the same bread that was the bread of affliction, then became the bread of emancipation. So it lays the halachic foundation for the evening. What are we accomplishing tonight? We're going to remember enslavement, we're going to remember emancipation, and we are going to stoke the fires of eager anticipation for messianic redemption. That was our first approach. Second approach we saw from the Rav and Rabbi Lam, Halach Ma'anya gives us the hashkafa of freedom. What does it mean to be free? According to Rabbi Lam, true freedom is expressed in the ability to have complete faith in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I believe that God is the captain of the ship. I believe that the Ribono Shel Olam is responsible for the events that unfold in my world, to me personally, and to us nationally, and to mankind globally. I have to do my part to partner with God in shaping those events, but freedom means the ability to give up all of the trappings of human power, just sit here with my flour, my water, my matzah, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu with you rests all the control. According to the Rav, Halach Ma'anya teaches us the hashkafa, the mindset ultimately, or the outlook on freedom, which is true freedom means the ability to give and to do for the other. So important. People could often erroneously look at freedom as an ability to just simply advance my personal agenda. No, no, no. What's the first thing we do as a demonstration of our freedom? Kol dichvin yesei v'yecha, kol ditzrich yesei v'yesach. Are you hungry? Are you hungry? Can I do something for you? That is what freedom means to the Jew. The ability to improve and enhance the life of the other, ultimate demonstration of freedom. Rav Kook, Halach Ma'anya gives us hope because the Leil HaSeder historically was a difficult time for people. How can you tell me I should act free when I'm not free? So Rav Kook says it's okay because our ancestors felt the same way. But the same way they thought things were hopeless, but in reality they were not. So too, if we just hold on a little bit longer, just stay strong, keep your feet planted, keep your head up, keep your head above water, salvation will come. Maybe not as quickly as I want it, maybe not when I want it, maybe not how I want it, but it absolutely will come. Right now, we're called dichven yesevichol. Right now, we're hungry, we're impoverished, we're lacking. But if we just stay strong for a little bit longer, just believe that there is light at the end of the tunnel, we'll come to called Ditzrich Yesevi Yitzchak. We'll see that Pesach Mikdash. We'll see ultimately that Karban Pesach. And lastly, again, we saw the approach of the Divrei Aaron, who kind of brings this all together. That after we establish our halachic framework, and after we go ahead and we define what freedom is, and after we stoke the fires of hope, so lastly, the Divrei Aaron says, but you know what real freedom is? Real freedom at the end of the day is the ability to maximize your current circumstances. Very often those are circumstances that we didn't choose. Very often those are circumstances that perhaps we do not want, or circumstances that we wished would have not been visited upon us, but they are our circumstances nevertheless. And you have a choice. You have a choice. And that choice, by the way, comes down to how you read these two phrases. You could say, Hashata avdi l'shana haba b'nei chorin, and you could read, this year I'm a slave, next year I'll be free. And you could read that phrase in one of two ways. You could say, this year I'm a slave, Nebuch. This year I'm a slave, Nebuch. This year, woe is me, I'm a slave. What am I going to do? My situation is so terrible, I can't accomplish anything. Hopefully next year it'll get better. Right? Hashata hacha, this year I'm here, I'm in Golos. What could I do? Nebuch. Hopefully l'shana haba b'nei chorin, so next year will be better. Or, you could read it differently. Hashata avdi l'shana haba b'nei chorin. This year, these are my circumstances. These are my circumstances. These are my God-given circumstances. How can I maximize them? Do I hope they get better? Do I hope they become more beautiful or holier? Of course. Next year, I hope that I'm free. But just because I hope that I'm free next year, just because I'm not free this year, does not free me from my obligation to maximize my circumstances. Yes, I'm in Golos. And could I be so much more if I was in Eretz Yisrael? I truly believe that I could. But, Hashata Hacha, this year I'm here. And so I pledge to myself, with my newfound freedom, to maximize my circumstances. So this little add-on paragraph, written in the vernacular of our ancestors, teaches us again the true power of freedom, the need to go in and be there for others, the need to put trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the need to go ahead and maximize our circumstances, no matter how compromised they may be. It was the hope of the Baal Haggadah that if he gives us these lessons over the beginning of the Haggadah, we have the entire evening to think about them, the entire evening to contemplate them, and in Yirat Hashem have the privilege to inculcate them within ourselves and within the lives that we lead. All right, we'll stop over here for this evening. Stay tuned for the schedule over the next. There is no shiur next week, but hopefully there's going to be a shiur the following week. So just stay tuned for the schedule.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rabbi.
It was a pleasure.
Hey, would it be possible to pay online?
Sure.